This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio, and if you know anything about popular 70s music and music in the 70s and that group, The Village People, then you know this. The enduring popularity of that song has ensured the group a place in musical history. What you may not know is that one of the Village People was born and raised in Raleigh. Randy Jones, the cowboy of the bunch, went to Enloe High School in the 60s, later graduated from UNC in Chapel Hill before going on to international stardom. He's the keynote speaker at this weekend's NC Pride Parade and Festival, and he is here to talk with us now. Randy Jones, welcome home and welcome to the State of Things. Good to have you here.
Thank you very much, and what a facility. Thank you guys for
not a bad
having
place.
All this. It's not a bad place at all, especially for a North Carolina boy that used to spend the summers working down near McGee's Crossroads in Johnston County, picking tobacco and tying it and everything. So to see that you guys have preserved all of this and not torn it down and built some glass structure is a testament to not only the wonderful traditions that North Carolina has and values and adheres to their legacy, but also to the forward-thinking aspect of this great state, a state that was, it founded the school that I also attended after UNC Chapel Hill, the North Carolina School of the Arts in Winston-Salem, and it was founded under the administration of Terry Sanford and the same state legislature that I'm sure we're going to be speaking of later.
We will talk about that and some of the paradox of North Carolina politics, as one of our columnists has written about so well in his book. But tell us what it was like. It can be a very progressive place. There are signs of progression all over the place. Tell us about the North Carolina and the Raleigh you grew up in.
Well, I think for me, and I was having this discussion with a wonderful woman and who's going to be a guest later too, Pam Spaulding. Growing up in North Carolina, I never felt anything but support and encouragement. I was never called names. I was never treated poorly. I was all through my elementary school experience at Wiley School in Raleigh and Emma Conn and then to Hugh Morrison Junior High School and Charles B. Acock Junior High School before I went to Enloe. I was always involved with theater in the community. I was involved with activities in the school like Honor Society and Service Club and High Y and French Club and all of that, so that I never felt a sense of being isolated or apart. I always felt involved.
Did you have to hide your identity, though?
Well, as far as identity goes, I never have had any. I never thought about it. I have been pretty seamless from my youth through today. I've never had to explain who I was, what I was, who I choose to love. I mean, of course, when I've had experiences with men and women, I've just chosen to spend the last 28 years of my life with a person of the same sex, which is pretty respectable for anyone out there listening, and those of us that might think that same-sex marriage is going to damage the institution of marriage. I'm here to tell you that we're not the ones who have a divorce rate of in excess of 50%, so give us a chance.
What do you think about your native state? I mean, on the one hand, and we'll get back to this paradox, on the one hand, it is the only southern state without a gay marriage amendment so far, and yet it will be on the ballot in May.
How do I feel about that? Yeah. I'm agog. I'm absolutely perplexed. I am here and will be in the upcoming year or 9 months through May, as often as possible with boots on the ground, to try to wrap my mind around understanding that mindset in the state of North Carolina. It is not, I can understand anybody's religious beliefs, how they might choose to interpret the Bible or the Quran or any other religious belief where they might use as a reference for their anti-equality feelings, but I do not understand it, and I'm here to speak with people, not only people who are allies, but also people who have an anti-equality feeling and would like to see a true first-class citizenry evolved, as well as relegating a large and substantial portion of the people who live in North Carolina now to second-class citizenship, as well as anyone who might be thinking about moving here that might be a gay, lesbian, bi, or transgendered, as well with an amendment put in this Constitution. It not only affects the people who are alive today, but children that will be born in the future and people who might move to North Carolina. Now, today, I don't know what the population, I think it's 7 or 8 million here. I don't know what actually anyone could say is the percentage of people who identify as lesbian, gay, bi, or transgender that might want to have confirmed, sustained relationships with a same-sex partner. But it not only affects them, but it affects their children. It affects the children that are produced by heterosexuals in the future and people who will be born and come here. So not only tens or 100,000 people, but it affects millions of people in the future if it's in the Constitution.
Well, and I certainly want to continue this conversation, and we've got a panel of guests coming on in the next segment, and we're going to talk more about it. But I certainly would be remiss if I didn't get some of the biography and find out a little bit about your career with the Village People. So I want to do a little bit of that now, with your permission, and ask you about how did you get started with the Village People?
Mm. Well, it's a long story, and as you can tell, I'm long-winded. I'm Southern by nature. Ask me a question, any subject, and I can talk on it. All right. Going to school in high school, I was the president of the drama club from junior high school through high school. I studied theater, film, and communications in college, studied dance at School of the Arts. I started out in the Raleigh Little Theater. First summer after I graduated high school, I worked at Unto These Hills, East Carolina Summer Theater. I did summer theater all the way till I moved to New York in 75, 74. I went to New York to be a model. I mean, to be a work on Broadway, found work as a model, became fast friends with a bunch of gals that I think were the original Girls Gone Wild. Janice Dickinson, Jerry Hall, Iman, Grace Jones. Grace actually got a record deal in 76. I helped her create her act for that. From that, the producers of Village People saw me, asked me to be in Village People. We got together. We recorded San Francisco Hollywood. Then we put out Macho Man. That got radio play. We took it around the world. Then we did YMCA and In the Navy and Can't Stop the Music and Go West. Made movies. It's all ended up now, like 35 years later, a little over 100 million records sold. I got about 75 gold and platinum albums. I got a star on Hollywood Boulevard. I met the Queen of England, met a couple of presidents. I have a wonderful partner for 28 years. I love North Carolina, and I love the coast.
Were you surprised at the success of that group?
Well, you know, when you're 22, 3, 4, 5 years old, you're surprised at a lot of things. But, you know, when you're working so hard at something, I was totally surprised. And, fortunately, the great thing, and it comes back to North Carolina, I have to say this, the great thing that I think stood me through all of that and why I was not so changed or affected by it is the fact that I was given a solid education from the first grade on in North Carolina. Not only did I get a high school and a public school education, but I was blessed and fortunate to receive scholarships to go to UNC Chapel Hill. And then I also received wonderful scholarships from the Siemens, Mary Siemens, and James Siemens, and the Haynes, and the Dukes to go to School of the Arts in Winston-Salem. So through the generosity and the really solid background and thinking mm-hmm. that the state has for an educating people, I'm a product of that. I'm a product of being born here in a good healthcare system. I am the product of an educational system. I'm the product of the sandy dirt from Johnston County and Wake County in North Carolina. I'm the product of being educated here, raised here, instilled with values here. I was raised in the Southern Baptist Church. I sat beside folks in pews that I want to see in the eye now that can say to me, you don't deserve the same rights I have.
What are you doing these days?
What am I doing? I'm singing. I had a birthday party in New York City last Saturday night. I got on a plane Sunday morning. I've been on 7 airplanes since up till today. I've been in Chicago. I've been in Galena, Illinois. I've been in Iowa City, Iowa. I've been in Indiana. I've been in Ohio, New York, and North Carolina. That's where I am right now. But I'm here for several days.
Well, we will talk more with my guest from the Village People, Randy Jones, here for NC Pride Weekend. He is the MC, keynote speaker, and just ahead, we're going to get a preview of Pride, talk about some of the important issues facing the gay community today. We've had a preview. We'll talk more on the state of things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay tuned. This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. Today kicks off Pride Weekend in North Carolina, a celebration of the state's LGBT communities. We've been talking with Randy Jones from the Village People. He's the keynote speaker at this weekend's NC Pride Parade and Festival. Going to be a lot of talk during the weekend about all the big issues, including North Carolina's proposed same-sex marriage amendment and the repeal of Don't Ask, Don't Tell. Joining us in the studio now is Stephen Petro. He's the author of the book The Complete Gay and Lesbian Manners, The Definitive Guide to LGBT Life. Also, Pam Spalding is editor and publisher of the LGBT advocacy blog, Pam's House Blend. And Reverend Brett Webb Mitchell is the former pastor of First Presbyterian Church in Henderson and visiting faculty at North Carolina Central University. Welcome to all of you. Good to have you on the program.
Thanks, Frank.
Great to be here.
So, Stephen, one of the big issues, of course, the proposed gay marriage amendment. Tell us about this. And first of all, were you surprised at all in the state that had the last southern state without an amendment, and now it's on the ballot? What do you think?
Well, first of all, I want to say what an honor it is to be here with Mr. Randy Jones. It's just fantastic. You've been
back at you, bro.
An idol of mine forever. And no, Frank, I wasn't surprised because that is what the Republicans said they planned to do. And Paul Stamm has been steadfast in pushing through this agenda. And so we're really seeing the fruits of, where the votes, came last in the last election. And I just want to echo part of what Randy said, that, there's a lot of emotion tied up with this amendment. And just so everyone understands, if this amendment passes, it will be on top of a law that we already have in the state that prohibits same-sex couples from marrying. So it's an added level of punishment and deprivation of benefits and rights to gay couples. And, because there's so much emotion, I think it's also really important to point out some of the facts around some of the arguments that Speaker Stamm is making. And, the primary one is that we need this amendment to enhance the status of marriage in this state, to, as he says, stop the depreciation of opposite-sex marriage. And, I spoke and listened to Professor Holding Lau at the University of North Carolina Law School, and he's made some really good points about the facts. And the facts are that the states that have these amendments, which are all the states around us, you don't have lower divorce rates. You don't have better marriage rates. There's no association between the two. So I think North Carolinians really need to understand, what this is about. This is about punishing gay people, depriving rights, and there will be no benefit. We have a problem with marriage overall. This is not the solution to that.
Well, let me ask you this, though. You talked about this Republican initiative that, and you weren't surprised when the Republicans took over the legislature. But the fact is, all of the voters of North Carolina are going to be able to decide whether or not they, as voters across the spectrum, want this amendment, right? I mean, it is the voters' choice now.
It is the voters' choice. And I think that, because there's so much, there's so much emotion in this, and there's also so much inflammatory language. I mean, Speaker Stamm is talking about if this passes, it will lead to adult incest. It will lead to polygamy. And, again, there's absolutely no reason to say that. It's like Michelle Bachmann talking about HPV and mental retardation. They're just in completely separate spheres. So, yes, it is up to the voters of North Carolina. And I think that what we're going to see in the next several months is, a very powerful campaign, by all of us, by Equality North Carolina on the ground, really exposing what this amendment's about, talking about a lot of the negative effects. I know we're going to talk about some of the very specific strategies here today. And I hope North Carolinians will be really open to understanding, what this is really about.
What about the organizing, Pam? I mean, I think part of the strategy in putting this on the ballot was to energize the base for conservative voters. This was sort of part of the thinking. This is one of the reasons you put it on a ballot. Has it had a reverse effect? Tell us about the organizing in the other direction against the amendment.
Well, I think the primary problem here is that the primary is not going to draw out a lot of voters, generally speaking. So the intent to bring out the base is correct. But just based on the feedback that I've received since this has come to the fore, is that people don't understand the impact of the amendment. So what we have to do is do a education plan on the ground. And really, we need to make this a visible amendment. It's not going to pass under the radar for people. We want businesses to say that they are for or against the amendment. We want people to put out yard signs and say whether they're for or against the amendment, to take a stand. This isn't one that you can actually sleep and let it go unnoticed.
And, of course, a lot of the organizing around this issue takes place in churches, Brett. Churches have some very strong opinions about this. You are a minister yourself, a Christian minister. Tell us about the scene now. This has been considered a religiously conservative state. Is it still that way? Are things changing?
I think this is still a conservative state, and it's part of a tradition that we've had for a long time. This is a state in which, in many of the small towns, villages, and hamlets of North Carolina, there is literally a church on every corner. And so the role of the church, and now also mosque and synagogue, and other temples and other places of faith, are having an incredible impact upon how we understand ourselves as human beings, as citizens of the state. And I think it's going to be also well dramatized at the Pride Parade and the festivities tomorrow. There will be churches that will have booths within the Pride Festival area that will be supportive and loving and spreading the gospel, and those of other faiths as well who will be there. And then when the parade starts, and this has been the habit for the last few years, there will be a chorus of people along the parade route who will be shouting at us. So it, in a wonderful way, it kind of dramatizes and encapsulates exactly where we are in the state of North Carolina, that there are these various opinions, that there are these various ways of expressing the faith, and it shows the ways that Scripture itself and Holy Canon can be interpreted and used both for and sometimes against those who are minorities in this country.
What do you make of the fact that the NAACP, which has not been a strong proponent at all of gay marriage, has come out? William Barber wrote in opposition to the gay marriage amendment. How significant is this?
Someone got a result from their poll numbers. Got a result from testing his waters, from trying to find out what his support is.
Is that true? Do we know that? I mean, it seems that support, have things really changed that dramatically in black churches in North Carolina?
I wouldn't suppose that there has been a huge shift or a change, but I think his argument was, this is not about your faith. This is about the civil rights of people that would be denied and permanently enshrined as second-class citizens. And to remind the people of a time when they were second-class citizens, and would you want your rights placed on the ballot? So I think he came from it from both a secular and a religious perspective, that we can respect each other's religious views, but this has no place in our state constitution.
That's the argument, and it's an argument that could have been made at any time along the way,
right.
And there has been utter silence from black communities about this until now. What does it mean, Stephen?
Well, I think partly what we're seeing here is that the whole issue of LGBT rights is very much now mainstream. You know, with the ending of Don't Ask, Don't Tell, which is just a milestone event this week that we can't really let that go by here, allowing gay and lesbian service people to be out, to be open. You know, we really sort of take center stage with gay rights being just part of the mainstream. And so I think we're seeing that the fringe elements are, and those who are opposed to gay rights, are becoming increasingly fringe when you sort of look at the spectrum. And people, you know, most well-reasoned, well-thought-out people, they don't want to be left behind like that and sort of become, you know, sort of part of that Tea Party confusion. And so I think folks are sort of, you know, walking more towards the center. And I think I think that's kind of part of what's happening here.
Could it be, you know, that the GOP debate last night, where a United States Marine who is defending our freedom in Iraq stood up and said that for the first time now he can be open, and he was booed by the audience in that. Is there a sense now that sentiment is now, as you suggest, really moving to the extreme? I'll give you another example. When Don't Ask, Don't Tell expired, My colleagues at the TV stations were doing their due diligence. They were trying to find somebody who would be opposed to this. They went to VFW Post and had a hard time finding anybody who thought it was a bad idea to let this expire. They got comments like, well, they're dying too, from the veterans. So Brett, maybe, you know, again, this question of mainstream, are you on the fringe of the American political spectrum if you now oppose rights for gay and lesbian people?
I don't think you're on the fringe. I think that we have a lot of work to still do. And sometimes these polls reflect certain parts of the country or certain parts of the state. For example, from my experience of living and preaching and working in Henderson, North Carolina, which is a smaller town, the views are rapidly different and drastically different than, say, what I would find in Raleigh, Chapel Hill, Durham. And so the dramatization of the difference of opinion has to do with what we have to do as members of the LGBTQ community. And that is to not only work politically together, but also I think the other agenda, and this is I think what's going to make the real difference, is the ability to tell our stories, to relate one-on-one with people, that the real change in this country will come and in this state, and indeed before the election in the May primaries, we will have to have a concerted effort to invite those who are in the closet to come out, for those who are out of the closet to tell their stories, to build relationships, because the way that all of these civil rights movements have made changes is not from a top-down structure, but truly from a grassroots kind of structure. And so that's what I'm looking forward to, is what we can do to mobilize people to tell their stories and to relate to one another as brothers, sisters, moms, dads, aunts, uncles, grandparents, that all of us within the state of North Carolina, and this has been said time and again, have a relative, have a friend, have a coworker who is lesbian, gay, bisexual, trans, queer, questioning, intersex.
Randy, let me ask Randy a question here, Steve, because I want to know, when you traveled across the country, what your sense is of the way, if things are changing, how sentiments are expressed, and whether you feel any movement as you travel.
Well, I just spent a couple of days in Iowa, Iowa, which is not unlike North Carolina, although it does have a same-sex marriage. Is legal.
You can get married there.
But it's also a very conservative state. I mean, I was in Dubuque of 70,000 people. It's quite conservative. But on a couple points that we're speaking of, Brett spoke about his churches. I think one of the best things people can do, he's right. We have to, each of us has to identify, has to make the change within ourselves and express to others, let them know that gay, LGBTQ people are not aliens, and speak to their, if they are a member of a church, when the pastor's standing at the door at the end of the sermon, stand in line and go there and ask if he is either supportive or not supportive. And if he's not supportive, have him look you in the eye and explain. Please try to wrap your mind around what he thinks for making you a second-class citizen, why you deserve something, he deserves something, and you don't. Now, as far as the voting aspect that Pam was talking about, and I think is that in a primary, everybody in the state doesn't vote, number one. And number two, even in a presidential election, everybody in the state doesn't vote. So we are having hundreds of thousands of people who identify as gay or lesbian. There are rights decided upon by a virtual small minority of people who might vote to have us made second-class citizen. That is not moral.
And it might be because if you're part of the 90 or 85% of the population that isn't gay, lesbian, transgender, then perhaps you feel like there's no price to pay. But the business community may, in the sense that this is a state that's done very well without an amendment. It has an ingrowth of population. It has done kind of a robust business environment here without that. So the question is there a price to pay if there is an amendment, Pam?
Well, there sure will be a price to pay. I mean, there's a lot of the companies that come here actually offer same-sex spousal equivalent benefits. A lot of our institutions do. So we're not talking about something that hasn't existed. We're talking about our state governments trying to discriminate. And I think one of the reasons why it should pay a price is because, one, our state does not have any opportunity protections for LGBTs. That's one of the reasons why it's hard to organize around these things, because people can't be out of the closet without fear of being fired.
Right.
So in a lot of ways, the national movement for marriage is the cart before the horse in states like ours, where we really need to have people out and about to organize and feel that they can safely do without losing their job.
You know, I wanted to just add on to that also. You know, when we're talking about business here, you know, we're going to be taking away these benefits that already exist, first of all. These benefits are very important also in attracting new employees and maintaining them. And when the first and primary issue in the state now is about jobs, to be taking on an initiative like this potentially that will make the job market worse, you know, it's ludicrous. And, you know, we all have to care about jobs in this state, and to, you know, be taking actions like this are just counterproductive.
So there may be business decisions to stay away from the state because it violates your own company's policy, or it may make you less attractive to executives and employees. So you say, we can't go to North Carolina because a lot of people we want to hire aren't going to be comfortable there. That's one. But two, Pam, you've actually called for a boycott.
Yes, I have. And Jane Protzman of Blue NC, we both said that it's time for scorched earth. If people don't understand anything else, they understand the bottom line. And we want all of the businesses in North Carolina, especially retail, where they have a storefront, to put up a sign saying where they stand on these things. It really becomes noticeable if people don't have a sign. I think that one of the things that I could compare it to is on 9th Street, where we hold the parade here in Durham, there was one establishment that refused to fly a pride flag out in front of it every year. Finally, one year, suddenly a pride flag appeared, and because no one was patronizing that business because they were not perceived as being LGBT friendly.
Well, it's interesting that you call it scorched earth because it's one of the pillars, in fact, of the nonviolent movement and non-participation in a system that you would consider unjust. But you call it what you want. How do you all feel about that? Is that a viable strategy?
I think that's one strategy, though, among many others.
That's right.
And
yes.
And that's why, for example, one of the things that I have tossed around with the idea with other friends who are writers is what would happen if we chose one of the 100 counties in the state of North Carolina to write op-ed stories, to write editorials, to write letters to the editor, because it is getting into these small little hamlets, villages of North Carolina. That's where a lot of these votes are going to be taken. And that's where a lot of these preachers and pastors primarily, are going to be speaking out against it. If we start to make a show, if we start to say within all 100 counties of the state of North Carolina, there are those of us who you are affecting, I think that's going to have a positive and could do a very important job in terms of educating the masses as to what this is all about.
And just one other thing, I want to remind people that millions of dollars are going to get poured in here from outside North Carolina, from the National Organization for Marriage, Family Research Council. They see this as a huge fight that they want to be able to score another win.
This is another ground zero.
Yeah.
Randy, you're going to give the keynote address at Pride Weekend. Give us a preview.
I'm going to try to maintain composure. No, I just want to stand up and identify that I am a product of the state, and I intend to return to the state for when I can no longer get up on stage and sing YMCA. I mean, I'm here often. I'm here several times a year down at the beach, but I would like to live out my years in a state that has feeling the same way that I felt the first 18, 20 years when I grew up here. I would like to have that same feeling.
I just want to add one last point here, which is this is a very personal issue for all of us, but really it's a personal issue for everyone in this state. You all know gay, lesbian, bisexual, and transgender people. This affects their lives. This affects their families. So think about that when you're contemplating what this will mean to them.
I want to thank all of you for being on the program today. Stephen Petro, author of the book Complete Gay and Lesbian Manners, The Definitive Guide to LGBT Life. Randy Jones, the cowboy from the Village People and keynote speaker at this weekend's NC Pride Parade and Festival. Pam Spaulding, the editor and publisher of the LGBT advocacy blog Pam's House Blend. You can find it at pamshouseblend.com. Reverend Brett Webb Mitchell is a former pastor at First Presbyterian Church in Henderson and visiting faculty at North Carolina Central University. NC Pride Festival is being held this weekend with events in Raleigh, Durham, Chapel Hill. Go to ncpride.org for more information. Coming up, the Dominican music and musician Joan Soriano, the Duke of Bachata. Stay tuned.